It's Monday, so it's time for the Political Junkie. Hi, Ken. Good to talk to you.
Good morning, Carrie.
If you have a question for the Political Junkie, 651-227-6000-800-242-2828. We're on Twitter, at Carrie NPR. Ken, I noticed that you noted in this week's Political Junkie newsletter that Republicans are being referred to as the gang that couldn't shoot straight after the health care debacle. Tell me where you think the greatest miscalculations were made.
Well, I mean, look, it's one thing for the Democrats, for the Republicans to be in the minority, or should I say out of the White House for 8 years. And, it's, you know, you could say that we're going to repeal Obamacare at any chance we got. And yet there was never in all those years, never a sign that there was a bill that would attract the support of all the Republicans in the House, let alone the House and Senate. So even after 2016, when the Republicans, pulled the trifecta of winning the White House and the House and the Senate, there was still no bill. So for Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, to say, OK, we're going to have a vote on the 7th anniversary of the passage of the Affordable Care Act without guaranteeing that every Republican was on board, let alone a majority of Republicans on board. It was poor planning. And there were some Republicans who, this is not a judgment. I think it's just an observation that it's easier to vote no than vote yes. And on certain things like the Affordable Care Act, they would, unless it was a complete and total repeal and repudiation, they were not going to vote yes.
I wonder, Ken, if you also think it was a pretty serious miscalculation to issue the kind of ultimatums that the president and the speaker did, which is, this is the only bill. If you don't vote for this one, there isn't going to be another one. I'm just going to let Obamacare. Some of the things that they said about this, now they're out there with these ultimatums that basically the Freedom Caucus said, we don't care.
Well, I think the more egregious of those really came from Donald Trump, and the fact that he said that, and especially direct, first of all, they withdrew the bill that 2 Fridays ago because they didn't have the votes. The first thing President Trump did was to blame the Democrats, which is beyond belief because I don't know what the Democrats had to do with anything. But then more and more frequently, he has talked about targeting the Freedom Caucus members in the primaries in 2018. And I mean, I think I have to go back to Franklin Roosevelt in 1938, the last time a president threatened members of his own party with retribution because they didn't vote his way. So yes, Paul Ryan did say, this is our only chance. We're going to keep Obamacare if you don't vote to pass this. Nobody believes that. I mean, they can come up with another bill with another language that perhaps can get the support of more Republicans.
But to issue these kinds of ultimatums with the very real risk that, your ultimatum is going to be ignored as it was, really seems like kind of political naivete in some ways.
Well, that's exactly what we've been seeing out of the White House, in the 72 or whatever days it's been since Donald Trump was sworn in. But, this guy does not come from he comes from a world of business where what he said went. He didn't have to worry about a Congress ratifying anything he had to say. So he's used to getting his own way. Remember, he threw up his hands that famous Friday and said, okay, if you're not going to vote for it, I walk away from it.
Right.
But to say that I'm going to make you pay politically, your own party, which you need to push your agenda through, that was just unbelievable.
That was ridiculous. To the phones here to Mark in Minneapolis. Hi, Mark. Your question for Ken.
Hi. So last week we heard that there will be a GAO audit into the cost of the Mar-a-Lago visits. Is there a sense that because this is the president's personal property, that there may be payments going to his personal organizations in these visits, and any sort of historical context for that type of visit?
Well, I don't know about personal payments going to Trump, although given the fact that his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and his daughter, Ivanka Trump, are involved in so many political issues with the administration, there are a lot of people who just say that there's a confluence or a crossover of politics and business interests that ethics issues should should be involved. But I think more the thing is that given the fact that Donald Trump offered this really seemingly draconian budget proposal, which of course is not going to be the final law, but what he offered with all these cuts and all these programs and the thought of millions and millions of dollars going in. I mean, he criticized Barack Obama for playing golf all the time when Donald Trump is playing golf all the time. And so the millions and millions of dollars that are being cost on Secret Service and other expenses because of his trips to Florida and his trips back to New York, where his wife and son are, is just, you know, rankling many Democrats. I don't think it matters. I don't think anybody's talking about illegal stuff, at least as of this point. But, you know, you never know where it could lead.
Ken, right now, the Senate Judiciary Committee is debating Neil Gorsuch's nomination. And we have a question here, a good one here from Jeff on Twitter, who says, is there a real logical reason to filibuster Gorsuch, or is this pure spite over what happened to Garland? And of course, we hear Democrats saying that they are going to try to filibuster because they don't think they have Congress has 60 votes to support Gorsuch.
Well, you know, I mean, I heard Nina Totenberg in the newscast talking about the fact that not every Supreme Court nomination in recent years had to get the 60 votes. Justice Alito was confirmed 58-42 in 2006, so I understand that. But Democrats, oh, look, they're still sore about what happened to Merrick Garland last year, who not only didn't get a vote but didn't get a hearing. Mitch McConnell and the Republicans say, look, that we've already, you know, talked about that, and it was decided in the election of 2016. But Democrats are really upset the way they were treated, and they feel that if, you know, to get to the 60 votes, show that the president of whatever party it is reaching across party lines to get somebody who could be acceptable to an overwhelming majority, a supermajority of the Senate. And of course, but that argument seems to hurt the Democrats in 2013 when Harry Reid, when the Democrats were still in charge, got rid of the filibusters for all the lower nominations, lower courts, cabinet nominees and things like that. So Mitch McConnell kind of feels that, well, you know, if you did it in 2013, well, we'll do it now. And the Democrats said, well, if you did it, we'll do it now because what you did to Garland. And then the Republicans said, yeah, but what about John Tower and Robert Bork? And the Democrats will say, well, what about Jim Wright?
I mean, It goes back 80 decades or something.
It does. When you and I started talking about this stuff.
Ken, I want to play the mystery newsmaker sound of the week because there are a lot of murmurings about how the politics of the West Wing are being managed. So listen to this.
Sometimes you can't fix it. Sometimes you can just take a 7-alarm fire and just make it a 4-alarm fire. It's still burning, but it's not as bad as it was.
Oh, how prescient he was. Who is that man?
It sounds, well, I've been wrong so many times lately. It sounds very Reince Priebusch.
Yeah, yeah. That's who it is. Yeah. Chief of staff. Now
Chief
for
of
the
staff,
president.
Who, of course, who so many things that, you know, they're defending. Well, this goes no matter who's in the White House. But when you're running for office and you're the out party, you criticize everything that the current administration is doing. And then you find yourself defending those very same things when the shoe's on the other foot.
How good of a job is it? Is it too soon to tell, or are you getting ideas about how good of a job he's doing managing, you know, the president, the flow of information, the political calculations here? What would you say?
Well, see, the thing is, nobody manages the president. Donald Trump manages the president. It's not the Secretary of State who announces foreign policy. It's 5 a.m. tweets that decide. I don't mean that to be snarky. It seems to be true. It seems like the cabinet, I don't know what autonomy the cabinet has. Certainly we hear about Rex Tillerson. I mean, for example, many of these meetings with foreign leaders, Donald Trump will have with Jared Kushner, who is not confirmed to any position, doesn't get a salary.
Well, Kushner's in Iraq today, isn't he, Ken?
He's in Iraq, exactly, on the behest of the chief of staff, who wants him there to you know, work on Mideast peace.
I mean,
it's just, I mean, do you remember that old joke that when Jimmy Carter was debating Ronald Reagan in 1980, and he said, you know, I talked to my daughter Amy, who was, I think, 9 years old, and said, what was the most important issue in the world? And she said nuclear proliferation, and everybody went crazy. Said, wait a second, you go to a 9-year-old to get the foreign policy advice? But
okay,
but you know,
you're not equating the two.
No.
What kind of experience does Jared Kushner have mediating Middle Eastern peace. None.
Exactly. But Donald Trump trusts people closest to him. We saw that during the campaign. We saw that during the transition. And we certainly see it now.
You mentioned the tweeting. The president, as you noted, has been using Twitter again for what I think of as his digital enemies list, right? Which there's no concealing of. So this time, Chuck Todd's in the moderator of Meet the Press is in the crosshairs. And this is what the president tweeted over the weekend. When will sleepy eyes Chuck Todd and NBC News start talking about the Obama surveillance scandal in capital letters? And stop with the fake Trump-Russia story. And then 20 minutes later, he added, it is the same fake news media that said there is no path to victory for Trump that is now pushing the phony Russia story, a total scam. You know what floors me about that tweet, Ken, is he's got that. He's back to the Obama surveillance scandal. I mean, Everybody wishes he would stop talking about this, that Obama wiretapped him. And here he is. He's back on it again.
Not only that, I mean, every time you see that from his supporters, too, every time there's another when he announced that April is Sexual Awareness Month or Sexual Harassment Awareness Month.
Assault Awareness Month.
Yeah. And everybody said, oh, did Billy Bush help him write this proclamation? And then his supporters will say, well, what about Bill Clinton? I mean, it always goes back to things that don't have anything to do with anything. But I think more disturbing to me is that, look, whether it's true or not, and there's no guarantee it's true, but with the allegations that Russia influenced or certainly tried to influence the election, the fact that the president of the United States dismisses it as fake news and not as somebody who says, well, this is interesting stuff, we should get to the bottom of that. The fact that he has no curiosity or no outward curiosity, it sends alarm bells ringing in my head. And of course, you know what's in my head already. But the thought of it is that how could you not be at least curious about what this is all about?
On Twitter here, a listener says to our conversation about Jared Kushner, well, people with experience have not done very well with foreign policy so far.
Very fair point. She's got a point.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Really
point. And that's the argument. And that's the argument that the Trump people have been saying during the campaign. They said, look, you know, you had the Kissingers of the world. You had Susan Rice. You had all these people with experience, Hillary Clinton. And look at the foreign policy of the last 8 years, the disaster in Syria and letting Russia do what it wants and North Korea doing what it wants. How many decades of presidents have been issuing threats against North Korea to no avail?
Exactly.
So experience doesn't mean everything. I think that tweet is very important.
So Ken, as you know, the president is saying he's moving on from health care and he's going into tax reform. I thought this was a very interesting story in the Times over the weekend that said the Koch brothers are going to spend millions of dollars to try to kill this tax on imports, which supports a lot of other measures in this tax reform bill. And I wonder if the health care meltdown emboldened people like the Koch brothers and plenty of other Republicans who aren't going to like a lot of what's in this tax reform bill.
Well, the thought that health care is tough, but the tax bill is easier. There is a reason why the tax code hasn't been changed since 1986, because nobody's on the same page. And the fact that the Koch brothers will fight the import tax coming out of Mexico, which Speaker Paul Ryan has been pushing very strongly for, the Republicans, whether they were on the same page of appealing Obamacare is one thing, they are not on the same page as tax laws. I mean, yes, you can lower the tax rates for corporations and the wealthy, and that's fine. But if we're talking about changing the whole structure of the tax code, the Republicans are not on the same page. So it's not a surprise to see the Koch brothers on one side, Speaker Ryan on another, Donald Trump on another. And, you know, this, pretty soon I suspect they'll wish they came back to health care, because tax reform has bedeviled many presidents of both parties.
I do want to say this about the Koch brothers. They didn't like Trump from the beginning. I mean, so there's no surprise, right, that they wouldn't be supporting him now. And they spent millions of dollars against him during the primary process, and it didn't matter. But does that kind of spending from that kind of an organization on a specific bill Does that matter more than in, you know, just in like a general campaign?
I think there's truth to that. I think, you know, lobbying certain efforts of things that may come out of Congress can be changed more than somebody saying, I just want to stop a presidential candidate. And earlier, Kerry, when you in the premise of your question about Republicans more being more emboldened, well, Democrats are too. And I think what's one of the one part of the reasons why they're more willing to talk about the filibuster for the Supreme Court, because they were really in complete disarray. Nothing was going their way after January 20th. And when they realized that the emperor may not have had has the clothes that he thought he had or said he had, Democrats could say, well, you know, maybe it's time for us to grow a spine or something like that. So I think both parties will be more combative in the future, and you'll see it not only this week with the Gorsuch nomination and certainly with any kind of succeeding Supreme Court nomination, because basically Gorsuch would be replacing Scalia, the late Justice Scalia. A new change would give the Republicans, the conservatives, even a larger majority, and Democrats have promised an all-out war on that.
I have one other note for you on this, Ken, which is interesting. I saw some numbers that showed that if you look at the districts that Republican House members represent, this goes to the we don't have to fear Donald Trump as much as we thought. You know, there are 20 some districts that went for Clinton, but still reelected their Republican House member. I mean, that's going to fit into the equation here, too, about how much you need to worry about the power of Donald Trump in some of these individual districts when it comes to legislation, doesn't it?
That's absolutely true. And to say it's only about the House Freedom Caucus, that's not true. As you say,
exactly.
There are Republicans who won moderate so-called blue or purple districts. Well, they look, the Democrats only need a net gain of 24 seats in 2018 to take back the House. And so while the Republicans are only focusing on the Freedom Caucus, they need these moderate Republicans, these so-called moderate Republicans in swing districts if they want to hold on to their majority.
Pleasure, Ken, and I'll talk to you next Monday. Thank you.
Thank you.